Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Prior Fridays and Gwynn and Chris, and our pleasure to have on the program today, Padres third baseman Ty France. A requested guest,
believe it,
on the Gwynn and Chris show, because when you got two Aztecs sitting here, we want an Aztec on the program, and it's great to have you on, Ty. First of all, congratulations on home run number one. I think you something you probably dreamed about. A, B, happy to get out of the way as well.
And C, you can't. You got to be happy with who you got it off of, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
not a bad pitcher.
Definitely. All three of those definitely felt nice to. One, get it out of the way, everything, you know, especially getting it off a guy like Syndergaard is pretty surreal.
Ty, you're starting to seem like you're getting to the pace of the game at this level. Things seem to be slowing down. How are you feeling now that you got some games under your belt and been out there quite a bit?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely feeling a lot better. You know, there's still, I would say, a little bit of jitters and nerves just going out there on a big league field, playing in a big league game, but I feel like that's pretty normal. But no, it definitely feels a lot better getting out there each day. Is getting a little better, and you know, just definitely having fun with it.
One thing that I'm so impressed with is that we sat down with you in Peoria, and I remember you very clearly saying, you know, look, if I have to go down to AAA, you know, because they had just signed Machado, I think, a couple of days earlier, and you said, if I end up having to go down to AAA, I plan on bashing my way right back up to the major leagues. And that's exactly what you did. And, you know, I'm very proud of you for that. I'm sure you're proud of you for that.
Yeah, I mean, El Paso is a lot of fun going down there and, you know, performing the way that I did and helping that team out. But it's definitely nice to be up here. These guys are a great group of guys. They're fun to play with, fun to be around, and, you know, just continue to play my game, and hopefully the success keeps coming.
Ty France, San Diego Padres third baseman, right now joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Ty, I want to talk to you a little bit about your time at State. Like, was there anything that maybe you didn't understand that whether it was Coach Martinez or Coach Gwynn telling you that you might have didn't understand at that particular time, and now that you know you've been through your minor league experience and now you're getting a chance to play at the big leagues, is there anything that's coming to light now that you're like, oh, that's what they were talking about?
I think one thing is just kind of the work ethic that they taught me there. Going, you know, through high school, I didn't have much of a structured program. And then getting to San Diego State, and you know how Martinez runs things there, and you know, kind of hard nose and getting after it, and I feel like that's helped me a lot just throughout the system and getting me to where I am today. Just because it's kind of given me my daily routine, my daily plan, like how to go about my day and how to get things done. So I think that's one of the biggest things going to State taught me.
One of the things Steven Strasburg mentions a lot. With him and my father's relationship, was how the mental side of the game. You weren't able to apply it at the college level, but the things that he guys taught you guys, you are easily able to apply it to this level.
Yeah, I think one of the things Coach Gwynn taught us was, you know, how important video was to him, and you know, going in after every game and him printing out the DVD with our at bats on it. And in college, you don't realize, like, you kind of just get the DVD and you're like, okay, I'll watch it whenever I get to it. And you get here now and it's everything, video this, video that. You need to review everything that way. And it's so important now and just a big deal. Like, that's how you get about each day is just watching video. I mean, I just bought an iPad just so I can watch video. So,
and you can afford one, too.
Yeah, doesn't hurt the bank as much anymore. But,
no.
That was one thing that Coach that I didn't realize how important it was until I got here.
Hmm. Ty France is with us, the Padres' third baseman. I keep wanting to say the Aztecs' third baseman because I called so many.
Long time ago.
I know it was a long time ago, but that's how long ago I called his games. But it's great to see him playing for the Padres and playing well. I just want to ask you about being at this level now and going out there. Are you how close are you to just playing the game now and not thinking about your surroundings and the fact that you are where you are? Or how much longer do you think that's going to take?
I think I've settled in pretty nicely. I think the only time it really I was like wowed by the surrounding was when we played that Dodger series. That Dodger series was crazy. I've never seen anything like that, 44,000 people a night screaming. That was something different. And but other than that, I feel like I've settled in nicely and haven't really made too much of it.
Now, Ty, you have really improved defensively a lot. That doesn't get you know, not a lot of people speak about that. You're moving pretty well laterally. What is that a point? Has that been a point of emphasis for you over the last few years as your bat has obviously spoken loudly, but not a lot of people are talking about your defense?
Yeah, definitely. And I got to give a lot of credit to my trainers in the off season over at a Top Notch Training in San Dimas. They really worked on my, you know, first step and my explosion and, you know, the little things that you don't think about as a baseball player, the footwork, the ladder drills, like stuff like that, that you really have to take a lot of pride in to become a better defender. And, you know, luckily my bat has always been there. I've always been a good hitter. And I felt like working with Jonathan Meyer last year, the AA infield coach, he kind of told me that if I want to take off to the next level, defense is going to be big for me. So we hit it hard last year, and you know, I feel like I've improved a decent amount and gotten me where I am.
Well, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you get drafted in the 34th round. I don't want to take you through that whole process, but I imagine as that was going on, you were thinking to yourself, you know, when are they going to call my name? When am I going to get the phone call? And I don't know, did you put a little chip on your shoulder being drafted that late and say, hey, look, I got to show these guys that they should have been thinking about me a little earlier?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like just growing up in general, that's always been my mentality, is with a chip on the shoulder kind of, because I never really was a standout guy. I didn't, you know, in high school, I wasn't, you know, your perfect game All-American or anything like that. And then college, I had a little bit of success, but junior year slowed down a little bit. And so being drafted in the 34th round is just, added a little more fuel to the fire. That was all.
Ty, you know, as it pertains to, you know, your so-called veteran, there's always a veteran that the young guys tend to gravitate to, or they find something that there's some common ground there between themselves and that vet. Who is the guy that you lean on the most right now?
I've been leaning on Greg Garcia a lot lately. Mm. He, you know, from day one in spring, he kind of, I know he was new to the organization, but he'd been around 4 or 5 years with the Cardinals. And I kind of just asked him, I was like, hey, man, like, this is my first big league camp. Like, I know you've been through it a handful of times. Would you mind if I kind of just shadow you? And he was all about it. He said, yeah, absolutely. Come on. You know, just follow me around. And so from that point on, I followed him around all spring. He helped me out a ton. And then I got here, and my role when I first got here was a bat off the bench kind of, you know, utility role. And that's right up his alley. He, from day one, he showed me, hey, this is how you get ready for games. This is how, when you need to work out, like all that stuff. So he's been huge so far in the couple weeks that I've been here.
That's amazing. That's great stuff to hear. Ty France is with us. Going to let him roll here. He's got a ball game to play tonight in Denver against the Rockies. I'm thinking, just kind of think about this like as the Mountain West Conference tournament you guys played in Reno that year, where it was freezing cold, blowing rain, knocking my radio booth over. I'm sure you weren't concerned with that, but I was. And you guys were slaughtering the ball all over the field at altitude in the snow. So you've been through this before, so good luck doing it again.
Real quick before we let you go, have you guys taken BP yet?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
So you can't tell me what the first BP experience like was in Colorado yet. So I'll check back in with you at some point.
Well, it's going to be Reno-like and then some. So enjoy it. Have a great weekend. Have a great time. Continue working it and representing the red and black. We're all behind you, Ty. Great job
Indeed.
So far, and thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Gwynn and Chris, back at you. Tony Gwynn Jr. over there, Chris Ello right here, and very pleased to be joined right now talking some baseball with Radio.com insider Joe Girardi, former great manager in the big leagues, to talk a little baseball. Joe, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing
Fantastic.
Well. I wanted to start out with, I know you played some of your career in Coors Field and played a bunch of cold weather games, and the Padres happened to be going in there this weekend, and just how different is it for teams coming in? Because this is a young Padre team, and there many of them are going to be experiencing this Denver feel for the first time. What are they going to encounter?
Well, you're going to be winded quicker than you thought you would be normally, number one, because of the altitude. I think the big thing for the hitters is you can't get caught up with trying to hit home runs there.
Yeah.
The outfield plays very big, but the ball flies there. Not as well as it used to since the humidor. And as pitchers, you got to understand your ball may not break the same. But the big thing is you can't give extra outs and you can't give outs away. And if you do either one of those things, you're probably going to lose.
Joe, Tony Gwynn Jr. here. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on this Padre baseball team so far this season.
Well, I think they've played very well, and they've probably exceeded a lot of people's expectations up until this point. You know, offensively, I think they can do better.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, they have their power has increased, but they probably still strike out a little bit too much. And if they could get more base runners, I think you would see an offense instead of being 12th or 13th in the league, probably in the middle of the pack. Their pitching has been great. Led by, you know, maybe Kirby Yates and Chris Paddock and what they have done. But this is a team that has a lot more pitching coming. And if offensively, if they can continue to improve, I think they're going to be really dangerous.
Joe Girardi is with us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Very pleased to have the former Yankee manager with us talking some baseball and former great catcher in Major League Baseball as well. Joe, big story today, this week during that Mets-Padres series was Chris Paddock and him talking a little bit about Pete Alonso and Pete Alonso striking out and then coming back the next day and hitting a home run. And I where do you come in on this new, hey, let the kids play? Are you old school? Are you new school? Or are you kind of like, well, I just have to accept it because that's the way it is now?
I think it is what it is. I have a son who's a junior in high school, and I see more things talking trash than I've ever seen in the game of baseball before, and showing each other up and home run trots and things that they're doing. But, you know, you have to understand, you know, I think Derek Jeter said it best. Humble yourself or this game will humble you. So everyone who is on top at one point is also going to be on the bottom. So you have to expect that if you are dramatic and you show a lot of emotion, that maybe when someone else gets the best of you, they're going to show it back. And as long as you're okay with it, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, I think about the thing with Chris Archer. You know, when he showed up the hitter before, the big home run that took 30 seconds to get around and looked like Barry Bonds, you know, he showed up the hitter before. And you got to expect that someone's going to show you up after. So I'm okay with it as long as it doesn't become violent.
Right. Joe, take us inside of a manager's mind when it comes to game planning for a guy like Manny Machado. You saw a lot of him while you were in New York. How do you game plan for a guy like Manny Machado?
Well, from the offensive side, a lot of times he was the guy that you weren't going to allow to beat you. And when he was with the Orioles, there were a lot of good hitters around him.
Yeah.
But I thought that he was the guy that was a little bit more difficult to strike out. You could make your pitch and he could still get his hit. He would use all fields and that sort of thing. So you had to be careful on certain pitches with him. And they had, you know, they had Adam Jones, who was really good, who was aggressive. They had Chris Davis, who was really good the years that I was there. But, you know, he had holes. Manny had less holes. And I think Manny, you know, I would say he's off to somewhat of a slow start. But this guy can really play. And defensively, he's as good as it gets. at third base. There's a lot of talk about other third basemen, but golly, I was always so impressed in what he did defensively.
Yeah, we're starting to figure that out really fast because he does it just about every game.
It's a bad guy to hit it to. That would be my advice to the opposing team.
Yeah, you're probably not going to find your way on base. Joe Girardi was a 2000 All-Star also as a catcher for the Chicago Cubs and managed the Yankees to the 2009 World Series Championship. Joe, are you enjoying your broadcast time right now, your radio.com insider time, or could you see yourself back in the dugout one of these days?
No, I do enjoy it, and I get to go around to a lot of markets in a sense. Yesterday I spoke to the Buffalo market. Today here I'm in San Diego. But I do miss managing. I do love that part of the game, the idea of putting guys in the best position to be successful and the strategy behind the game and seeing young players have success. I think of a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, what a pleasure to manage a young man like that who has a lot of potential and a lot of talent, but you want to put him in positions to succeed. And as he succeeds more, you give him more responsibility. And I think the Padres have done a wonderful job with him.
Joe Girardi joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, radio.com insider. Joe, the Padres have a really young pitching staff, and most of these guys haven't pitched over 120 innings. So there's a lot of talk about the innings limit. What do you think of innings limits as it pertains to pitchers?
I think it's important. I think it's that you protect your assets. Yeah. They call them assets now. They don't call them players anymore. They call them assets, right? But the one thing that I think that most people realize, you can't win without pitching. And when you start losing, pitchers that are number ones and number twos and number threes, it's really hard to compete. It's you just can't replace them. And you think about the guys at the top of a rotation, they usually give you distance and it gives your bullpen somewhat of a day off during those days, and you use your bullpen a little bit more heavily on starters 3, 4, and 5, and you have to protect them. Is because I don't think physically they're ready for it. And the thing about pitchers today is most of them are max effort from pitch one.
Yeah.
There used to be pitchers that would only try to throw you two pitches the first time through, and it would be fastball, maybe changeup, and then they would start mixing everything. These guys are throwing the kitchen sink. They're airing it out as hard as they can for pitch one. There's no such thing as a BP fastball anymore.
No.
Those are non-existent. So I think you do have to protect them from themselves because they will physically go at it really, really hard to compete. And it's not what you want to hear as a manager. It's not what you want to hear as a position player. But for the longevity of the pitchers, you have to protect them or they will get hurt.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's just such a conundrum what you do. I mean, if the Padres, let's say, are able to stay in the running this year into July, early August, and then all their pitchers get to their innings limits, I mean, it would be so difficult not to try and go and make a playoff run. But at the same time, you want to the future is important too. So,
yeah, and it's frustrating for the fans. I think it's frustrating for the position players a lot of times. And here's the interesting thing: you got a young pitcher. And you say you're going to ride him out as long as you can until he gets us to his innings limit, where you might think, well, should we skip him a couple starts? But you also factor in, are they going to get hurt where they miss a couple starts? It becomes a mind game when you're trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen. So I think you ride him as long as you can, but then you protect him when you have to.
Outstanding stuff from Joe Girardi, radio.com insider, former big league manager, World Series champion. Thanks for joining us out here in San Diego, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Always enjoyed watching you play, and just gritty, great baseball, and great managing career as well. Hope to see you back in the dugout soon.
Appreciate it, guys, and good luck to your Padres.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
And the Big Five is brought to you by Eco Water Treatment Systems for anywhere you drink water. Let's get going, Thomas.
Number five.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this the other day, but Cubs infielder Addison Russell recently returned from a 40-game suspension for violating the league's policy on domestic abuse stemming from his former marriage. And after hearing boos before his first at-bat on Wednesday night, he said, quote, "If hometown fans want to boo someone that's trying to help them bring the team a World Series again, then that's on them," end quote. Today, he changed his tune a bit and attempted to walk back those comments, saying, quote, "Everyone is entitled to doing whatever they want to do. Think whatever they want to think, say whatever they want to say." So he said that this morning, "The reaction to me, I have to respect that. My actions are what they are. I have to be responsible for them." Addison Russell is 25 years old and has a long career ahead of him, but people are saying that this does not sound like he learned anything from his 40-game suspension. So, Tony, do you think that Addison Russell didn't learn? I know it's, you can't really put yourself in there, but do you think he learned anything from his suspension based on those comments?
If I'm basing it off the comments solely, no, he hasn't. But that's not what it's based off of, his comments, necessarily. Yes, there's always the chance that people, when cornered, say the wrong thing a lot of times. And
I do it all the time.
Clearly, he thought about what he said and had to backpedal, whether he came to that conclusion himself or somebody helped him come to that conclusion. We could argue that. But ultimately, I'm not going to judge him based off of one set of comments. Now, if this continues to happen, then it'll be clear to, like it has for Johnny Manziel, for you, Scrape. Like, it's clear to you that he hasn't got it. All right. I'm going to let this some time go between, and let's see how he does.
Chris, what do you think?
Same thing. Honestly, I don't know Addison Russell. I would hope that the 40-game suspension, is helpful to him. I hope he got the help he needs. I hope it sticks, and I hope he learns from it all. And I'm not going to judge him on one. I don't even think his comment was that outrageously horrible.
Right, right.
I don't know any of us who would really want to be booed.
It's pretty tone deaf, though.
And then when you're booed, and then somebody sticks a mic in your face and says, "How'd you feel about being booed?" You might come back with, "Well, that's up to them if they want to boo you." I'm gonna hold judgment like Tony and see what happens here.
In a perfect world, I'm sure Chris and I and everybody would love to hear him be like, "You know, everybody's entitled. I get it. I understand why they're booing me." You know, that'd be kind of along the lines of something you would want to hear. But listen, it's not that way. Everything's not lined up perfectly. Give it some time. Let's see.
Let's hope he gets back on track.
Number four.
Now, Albert Pujols made history yesterday with his 2,000th RBI against the Detroit Tigers, but he is going to have an issue getting that ball back. Tony Paul of the Detroit News wrote that a Tigers fan named Eli Hides, who is a 33-year-old law student, was the one who got the ball. And as is standard practice when a fan retrieves a milestone ball, stadium security has to get involved, and officials from both teams were bargaining with him to get the ball for Albert Pujols. In this instance, though, Hides wanted no part of it. In the end, he didn't take anything, and he's going to keep the ball, and he's going to either give it to his brother or to his son, who's going to be born soon. The problem with giving it back for Hides and his friends was that the team was actually very difficult to deal with, putting a lot of pressure on him and Tony, putting a lot of pressure on him to give the ball back. And among the interactions, they informed him that per MLB policy, because the ball was hit into the seats and because of a chain of custody concern, it could not be officially authenticated, which means you're not going to be able to get anything for it down the road because we're not going to help you out on this. So, Chris, should fans be allowed to keep historic pieces of memorabilia like this?
Yes.
This is kind of crazy to me that you would
possession
say
possession is 9/10 of the law. It's up to this guy. I think he's being a little bit of a jerk about it. Personally, I would be more than happy to give the ball right back to Albert Pujols. I wouldn't even ask for anything in return. If Pujols wanted to offer me something, I'd probably accept it and say thank you. But I'd be honored to give him the ball. I mean, that would just be the way I would look at it. But do I think fans have to give memorabilia balls back? No, I don't think they have to. I think it's the right thing to do, but I think it's really
weird if you're going to stand in front of Albert Pujols and say, no, I'm good. I'm not going to give you your ball back.
He didn't stand in front of Albert Pujols, by the way. He stood in front of...
No, he said he met with Albert.
Oh, he did meet with him.
I'm pretty sure he met with Albert or...
I didn't see that. I just saw I just saw that Pujols said it's his right to keep the ball and it's a great memory for him. That's what Pujols said.
Then I'm making that up, but... Tony?
Don't say that on the air.
That's I swear you're making something up.
I swear that I read that. But again, I'm proving to myself that I should not go off the top of my head. So, Tony, did you ever have to get a ball back from a fan?
I don't know.
Your first home run or your first stolen base?
I got it back, thankfully.
First hit?
Texas wasn't very good when I hit my homers. There were some open seats out there. and it was my first one, so I gave it back. Listen, I think... that, like Chris said, this guy's probably being a little... the teams aren't being difficult. They are asking you, they're trading, and usually it's pretty good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Albert Pujols is probably willing to give up more for something like this than he is in any other situation. So the fact that he couldn't come to agreement, not with just one team, he negotiated with both teams.
Yeah.
That they both got involved. So that means you're getting double the stuff. You're getting something from the Tigers, you're getting something from the Cardinals. And you still didn't want to give it up, that's great. It is his prerogative. It's his right to give it up. But without that authentication, if you decide to sell it, even though he didn't say that, he said he's going to give it to his brother who's going to look at it in a case and say, oh, that's Albert Pujols' 2000 RBI.
Yeah, I mean, what's the big deal to keep it? You'll be like the only guy in the world that knows you have it. Are you going to invite people over to your house?
Are you
going to
make a museum out of it? Yeah. Like, there's got to be some
charge for admission.
There's just no reason that I can think of to
keep it. Why you would want it?
Unless you think you can sell it, and apparently he's not going to be able to sell it.
He'll be able to sell it, just nobody's going to be able to believe if it's real or not.
Right. He could sell Albert Pujols' 2000th RBI ball as well as I can sell it.
Right.
I can just go, here it is. I don't really get why fans need to keep stuff like this. Like, that's my thing. Maybe it's because I was, you know, a player and, you know, I'm in the media and I'm close enough to these guys that I don't feel that need. But I would be more than happy to give these guys their stuff back because it means something to them and it would mean very little to me.
Listen, ever since I was a little kid, I have been trying to figure out the sensation behind a baseball.
Yeah.
It is the damnedest thing I've ever seen. You go to the park, and everybody wants a baseball.
Everyone.
Like, they've never seen one in their life. It's like this new thing that fell off of the...
Did you see the highlight on YouTube? There was a guy, I don't remember what team it was. I think it was at San Francisco. He dropped an entire tray of food.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to catch a ball.
Twice?
Yeah, then 5 minutes later, he dropped an entire pizza
because
another ball got hit to him.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I don't know that he came up with either ball, but it cost him a good $46 in food trying to get it.
You know, Ty France, he hit his first home run the other day, and he said that it was very easy to get the ball back from the fan because it would be really weird to me to be like, no, you can't have your milestone.
But this is why I don't necessarily believe my man, right? Because if it for instance, Ty France the other day hits his first home run, it was easy to get it back. The only reason why this is difficult to get back is because it's worth something. It's 2,000 RBIs, one of three guys to ever do it.
Right.
Why is, just be honest. Like, if you want to be like, hey, I don't want to give it up. I'd rather sell it. And, well, he kind of lost his thunder when the MLB was like, well, you ain't going to get our authenticator, so you're not going to be able to know it's real.
It's not going to be easy to sell.
The Mark McGwire guy, he ended up selling it for a lot of money. But I don't you think the MLB should just make a rule saying if there's a milestone, you have to give it back?
No.
Just so this never happens.
How are you going to enforce
that? They can't make that rule, Scraby.
You're going to have people...
How can they enforce that? You buy the ticket. It's on the ticket. It's part of your legal binding contract.
I guess they could do that, Rob, but that's a lot.
And then when the guy gets the ball, you just give a couple burly security guys and they just wrestle it away from him.
Yes, because, you know, I've never caught a ball a game ever, and it really bothers me.
Number three.
Just hate on everybody.
Yeah. The Cleveland Browns are not afraid to draw attention to themselves. Last week, Odell Beckham Jr. said he hopes to turn the Browns into the Patriots. And now general manager John Dorsey said the Browns fans are more passionate than Packers fans. Don't know why he went after Packers fans, but he did.
Who said that?
The GM of the Browns, John Dorsey. He said in an interview, quote, I think the fan base deserves this because this is the Cleveland Browns. To me, it's one of the marquee, iconic franchises in the National Football League. Last year, we finished third in the AFC. That's not not good enough. So what we did after the season ended, we constructed the plan on our second year of this thing, end quote. So, Tony, do you think the Browns fan base is more passionate than the Packers fan base?
And this is John Dorsey?
This is the general manager, yes, John Dorsey of the Cleveland Browns.
I think he's trolling. I don't know if you guys saw the article that came out that said he was calling GMs during the draft just to mess with him because he knew he didn't have a first round pick.
Bush league.
Why would he do? Oh, okay.
I think he's trolling right now. I think he's feeling pretty good about the moves his organization that he has made. Really, he's a GM. He's made the moves. And I feel like he's having some fun with it right now, is what I think. And to answer your question, no. What? It just depends on what type of passion you're talking about. Because the Broncos fans, I've seen it. It's Browns. A long, long time. I'm sorry. The Browns fans, I've seen it a long, long time.
They throw dog bones on the field and stuff. They're pretty weird, man.
It depends on the type of passion you're talking about.
Yeah. I think both fan bases are passionate. The only thing that John Dorsey's mistaken on there is that the Browns are a long-standing charter member, et cetera, of the National Football League. They're not. They came from the All-American Football Conference and joined the NFL after that league folded in about 1951 or two. The Packers, on the other hand, like the Bears, like the Lions, they are an original member of the NFL. So let's at least make sure Mr. Dorsey's aware of that.
Yes, Mr. Dorsey. The Browns haven't even played a game yet, and they're already calling themselves like the winners of everything.
Yeah, well, good for them. They're going to have to prove it on the field.
Number two.
Jets first-round pick Quinnen Williams arrived at the Jets facility today, and the defensive tackle was all smiles. It looked like he felt like a little kid getting to meet his new Jets teammates and had some pretty funny quotes when he talked to the media. Here he is at the press conference earlier today.
He first walked in, I'm like, man, it's Leonard Williams. Like, he a beast. He from USC. I should give props from props, dude, basically. But, yeah, I was being a little fan, and we just worked out together and stuff like that. And we just, like, talked about football in general, talked about how NFL going to go and how his rookie year was and stuff like that. And just grew a bond just through football. I didn't know at the time that I was going to play with him and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was, like, a fan at first because, you got to think about it at the time, like 7 months ago, I didn't even know I was going to start. So it's like to be in this position right now, I'm like, bro, that's crazy. So like when I get to meet people, I'll be like, man, that's dope. Like, I met Le'Veon Bell yesterday and I'm like, whoa, like Le'Veon Bell, like the number one running back in the NFL. Like it's just crazy. So I just...
He goes on and says a few things about some more teammates, but before you kill me for this question, this is my question, but it's not my feelings about this thing. Chris, do you think this is an immature look for a player coming into the NFL? It's not my feeling, it's my question.
I guess there was actually something about his youthful enthusiasm there that I enjoyed.
Me too.
I got to be honest with you. It's a whole lot better than a rookie coming into the league and going, hey, you're going to be playing with Le'Veon Bell. Who's Le'Veon Bell? Which is like a lot of these guys are nowadays. They don't know anything about the game. They don't know anything about the history of the game. So I didn't think it was a bad look. I thought it was kind of fun and fresh.
All right, we're running out of time, but Tony, what do you think?
I loved it. I mean, I always enjoy listening to guys fulfill their dream and be starstruck. I mean, I know they're the professional now, and they're supposed to act a part, but it's cool to see a guy like open the curtain, let you know how he really feels. I mean, you could hear the excitement that he's going to get to play with Leonard Williams. I mean, they're going to be on the line at the same time. It's pretty legit.
All right, quickly, last one. You guys can just give a quick answer. ESPN NBA analyst Brian Windhorst said today he's getting a sense that LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, they, quote, kind of need each other. So what happened with the end of the Lakers season and the end of the Celtics season, do you guys think that Kyrie and LeBron are going to play together again? Tony?
I certainly wouldn't mind it.
You hope.
Certainly wouldn't mind it. Do I think it's going to happen? I think there's a good chance it happens, honestly.
In L.A.
Based on everything that's happened, I think it's a good chance.
Chris?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Kyrie Irving's going to start his own league and go take his basketball and go home by himself.
Really? Okay.
There you have it.
I don't
know. That was a scraby answer.
That's all for the big
it's a scraby take.
From Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Now, you guys got to get out of here because I got to do a pregame show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.